The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. And this just might be one of the best, worst jokes ever from Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan. We're just going to jump right into it. Here we go.
Hey, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. I'm in beautiful Oslo, Norway, home to countless fjords and a lot of pretty heavy metal music. Nice day here. I was just calling to tell you I found my first gray pubic hair. And normally things like this wouldn't bother me, but it was in my egg McMuffin. Thank you very much. Bye.
Duff always, yeah, he's always on it, man. We love having Duff McKagan calling every single week. One of the greatest bass players in rock and roll history from one of the greatest bands in rock history, but still takes the time to call us every single week with Duff McKagan's joke of the week every Friday, no matter where in the world he is or what he's doing, like heading home after wrapping up Guns N' Roses sold out summer tour of Europe. Now they're going back out on the road in November, so you still have a chance to see them this year if you haven't yet. And another great rock and roll show to check out right now is Hailstorm. They're on the road with In This Moment and New Year's Day, kind of a three female fronted band package. They're out all summer long, and hailstormrocks.com has all the ticket information. Hailstorm are touring behind their brand new album, Vicious, and this week we're talking about the making of the new album with Lizzie Hale and guitar player Joe Hottinger. Lizzie's also sharing experiences about being a female in a world dominated by men and why it doesn't bother her in the least. She and Joe have road stories, studio stories, and a couple of awesome Spinal Tap moments, mostly involving Lizzie's brother and band drummer RJ. And speaking of summer tours, Fozzy's touring Europe right now as well. We're doing the Wacken Festival in Wacken, Germany today. Tomorrow, headlining show in Berlin. And then we have Bochum on the 6th, Aschaffenburg on the 7th, the Leyendas del Rock Festival in Alicante, Spain on August 9th. And then we finish off August 11th in Alcatraz Festival in Belgium. Get there early. We're the first band on the main stage. And then, of course, we finish off with another main stage performance at Bloodstock in England, Canton Park in Walton-on-Trent, Derbyshire. And then we come back to the States to start another leg of the Judas Rising tour, starting August 24th in Atlanta, Georgia at Smith's. We got Adelita's Way, The Stir, and Stone Broken joining us. FozzyRock.com, all ticket information, and is the place to buy tickets for Fozzy's world famous VIP meet and greets. We do a mini concert for you. We take pics, we sign stuff, we do songs that you're not going to see later on in the set. We do cover songs, we do all of our hits, we do whatever it is that you want to do. Come hang with us before the show for one of the best VIP meet and greets of the business. And don't forget, we continue on the 25th in Birmingham, Alabama, 26th Huntsville, Alabama, 29th Clarksville, Tennessee, 31st Little Rock at the Revolution Music Room. Then we're in Joliet, Omaha, Des Moines. Go to FozzyRock.com to check out all ticket and VIP information. And we're also doing the Rock Allegiance show in Camden, New Jersey on October 6th. So much stuff coming up as we wind through the Judas Rising tour and Hailstorm getting ready to do the Vicious tour. Here they are, right here. Long time coming. People have been waiting to hear Lizzie Hale and Hailstorm on this show for a long time. You want it, you got it. Here they are at last. Hailstorm.
Hailstorm.
right, so let's do the obligatory mic check. I'm here.
You are here.
I am here. Check.
We're all here.
I think so.
Sibilance.
Yes.
Sibilance. So I'm here with Lizzie and Joe from Hailstorm, and this is a long time coming. People have been requesting this for a long time.
That's awesome. Hopefully we don't disappoint them now that they've been waiting this long.
Well, you know what's funny?
That's what we've been waiting for.
We pulled up here and our bus was like on the side of the road, and I got here on my own. And the first guy I saw was Joe, and you never know who you're going to see at the festivals, because I know that you guys were on a couple of these, but we're doing like four. And so it's just like stupid dummy guy me. I'm like, I could have just looked it up and went, hey, Hailstorm is here.
Dude,
let's do
we're
podcast.
The worst with that too. It takes like till like maybe the day before, or if not day of, like, oh, cool. Mm. What are you doing here? Oh, you have, you're playing.
And that's the last time I saw you guys was at Aftershock last year.
Yeah.
Remember just Sacramento. Just ran. Now I have a bone to pick with you, Lizzie. Uh-oh. I get here and they give me my pass for the show.
Yeah. Oh,
I'd have to say that Lizzie Hale is now the
I'm now the official
face of Rock USA.
Wow, yeah. Look at that.
But this is last year's hairstyle, though, isn't it?
It is. So they're a little bit behind. But
did you even know this?
No, I did not know this.
There you go. Sully is going to be so mad at you.
He is. Because it was going to be Sully's face. And something.
Contractual obligations. I need a bottle of vodka. I need some grapes. And I need my face on the pass.
And I need my face on the pass. Yes.
But you do. You always different hair.
Yeah, you know, it's like it's one of those things where for a couple years I had it consistent, like one hairstyle for like 6 years, and then I don't know, something just snapped one time. I went off the deep end. I started changing stuff
around. I always find that's the best way to do it, though, is always like reinvent and stay. Like if you have the same look for years and years and years, you get more longevity when you change things up.
That's what I think. And it's funny too, because I went for the chop first, so I went super short. You know, and then so as it's growing out, it's just doing its own thing, and so it's forcing me to keep changing.
Yeah,
so it's not me. Hair. My hair is a mind of its own. So
yeah. But that's good. I mean, it's funny too, because even on the official Rock USA face of the show, Lizzie Hale, you almost got like a little David Bowie thing on your face,
which I requested as well.
As well. So that's what we're talking about.
I'm that big of a diva.
The Bowie change, right? Exactly. That's right. So and we were talking earlier. Is your home area?
Yeah, I grew up. My grandparents lived here. My grandpa was the assistant fire chief in Oshkosh.
Oh, don't wow. You know?
So he used to take us to the EAA. Do you know what the EAA is?
No.
It's the Experimental Aviation Association, maybe something like that. But they have every July, it's around this time, they have a big air show. It becomes the busiest airport in America, this little Oshkosh airport. It was awesome, though. We used to sit on the runway and watch like a Concorde came in and landed.
Yeah.
They had a stealth bomber you got to kind of tour and look
at. That's the stuff that you're super exciting back when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And now people just play games, video games with that going on.
I think you would still be just as excited if you could do that.
Go look at the stealth bomber again.
Stealth bomber. Yeah, something tells me.
That's so random, though. Like, hometown gigs are always kind of hard, too, though, right?
Yeah, it's family time.
And babysitting.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes, you know, my family, they've been coming out for years now, so they're cool, and they get it. In the beginning, though, it was kind of like, you know, backstage, there's kind of some unspoken ethics, you know, of things you do and don't do, and you don't just go running into other people's dressing rooms, for example, or... You don't try to fight the security because your son's on stage.
But they have to learn that, though.
Yeah, they do. They have to learn it and go through a few bumps in the road. And I had one.
There's a couple rock star moments.
Extended cousins, like, I thought they left. And I was like, cool. They're, you know, all right. Just get coming on. And, like, the headliner security came back and, like, Joe, we need to talk to you. I was like, what? Like, we found your cousins having sex in Chevelle's dressing room.
They were just living it up, man. Just living that rock and roll life.
But that's the thing, like, when you get people that don't understand, like, the etiquette. Like, you know, we're long-term rock and roll people. You understand there's certain things you just don't do.
Etiquette was the word.
Etiquette's the word.
Thank you.
We had a bass player who was filling in. We did a tour with Slash. And the first thing is like, hey, this is our bass player. And he's like, oh, can I take a picture of the man? Can you please take a picture? I'm like, dude, you don't ask to take a picture the first time you meet Slash.
Yeah,
maybe at the end of the tour, you take one then. But as a long timer, you're just like, kind of sucks in the dressing room and don't take a picture with the headliner. Right?
Amazing.
But how did you guys meet then if you came from Wisconsin and you're Pennsylvania?
Well, we both met in Pennsylvania.
I went to high school in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I left
Wisconsin here when I was 13.
You know, gotcha. We just... kind of realize this is only in the past like 2 years. I guess we never talk, but yeah. but our my first gig as Hailstorm and his first gig in his high school band, it was in the same month, just counties apart. So yeah. Like, we were kind of like,
oh, wow.
But we didn't know each other then. Uh-huh. That was in middle school.
We were on the same path, just parallel somewhere.
Right. Yeah, somewhere finally.
Did you ever hear of each other's bands?
I had not. No. No. Okay. Definitely didn't hear.
I did not hear about Joe's New Socks. No.
What was the name of your band?
Joe's New Socks.
Joe's New Socks.
Joe's New Socks.
I didn't name it. It was the other people in my
band.
Yeah,
sure. Sure.
Whatever.
We have yet to hear the real story.
Joe's New Socks. Yeah, interesting.
They have to be my socks.
talk about prima donna.
Yeah.
You want your face on the pass.
And
he
my
wants
name
new
on the
socks
pass.
For every game. But I know we did an interview years ago from our radio show, and you were saying that you're almost like a rock and roll Partridge Family that you grew up in. Like, your parents were in a band? Or
no, well, my dad was a bass player in like the 70s, 80s, but like cover band stuff. And he always told me, he's like, yeah, my keyboard player was on the uppers, and my guitar player was were on pot. And it's like, and so he had this whole thing when we were growing up, he's like, you know, obviously don't do drugs, Lizzie, don't do drugs, but if you're gonna do drugs, make sure your entire band does the same drug, because that's, he truly believed that was his downfall. But I found some old tapes, and it was like, no, they just weren't really any good. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't the drugs, Dad. But no, so he'd been a bass player for years, and he, you know, got a real job. My parents waited 10 years to have me, so they just like went all around the country and moved different places. And after I was born, got a real job. Then, you know, when I was 13 and my little bro was 10, we named the band Hailstorm. We had our first show at the Schuylkill County Fair in Pennsylvania. It was just the two of us at the time. And you know, you go through that phase where it's just like, well, Dad's a bass player. He could totally be in the band.
He's a Hail.
And then you turn like 15, 16, and it's like, Hey, little bro, it's not cool to have Dad in the band anymore. It's just not cool. So we're like, we had to sit Dad down and be like, we're going to find some people our own age. And he was a little bummed. We're like, you can still come to the shows though, Dad. You can like drive the van.
Sell merch if you drive the van.
Somebody's got to drive us there. So it was very, you know, it was that type of thing. But it's so weird because my brother and I talk about that all the time, about by having that kind of family core. Now it's like, our crew is basically like, there's Uncle Mike and there's Noah and there's our cousins and whatever. Like, everyone is kind of family.
So that's a literal led family. Through.
No, it's not literally, gotcha. But like
road family.
As road family, yeah. Like it's
we
still
spend more
that
time
mental.
With our crew and then we do real families.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing of us being on the road. Like I told you, we've been off for a couple months. And it's like weird. You miss your dudes, but you don't. But as soon as you see them, it's like nothing's changed.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we're back again.
We're on this this hilarious group text always. And
it's my favorite social network.
It's just no matter what, because we're all just making fun of each other. And then like this one time our girl Detroit was like, when is our next show? Because I can't like talk to my people, my normal friends, my normal family. It's like they don't get the humor anymore.
Right. Yeah,
it has completely evolved into just this community. So.
Culture that, you know, every band has its own little culture.
Each band has their private jokes too. Yeah. You know, you get the Hailstorm jokes, you get the Fozzy jokes. Yeah, they don't really mix with other bands sometimes.
Doesn't work.
We'll be crying, laughing at something and everybody's like, why is that funny?
Now, do you guys like with your crew, are you able to retain them, or you just got to call them and say, we got a tour coming up, hopefully you're available?
No, we've been pretty consistent for years.
Yeah, we've had the same guys for three. Detroit's been with us how long?
8 years.
Nine or ten,
I think.
10 years,
actually.
And Mike has been with us five or six.
Six.
Same
six.
With
so
Noah.
So important though, right?
Yeah, it's best. Like, we all have a flow and a vibe, you know, and things just move.
Well, yeah, and plus, and also too, like, yes, you know that things move, but it's just on a personal level.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, it's things too. Like, obviously you have to have talented people on your crew, and same thing in your band. But it's like, in that same mentality of your band, it's like you can be like the greatest guitar player in the world, if you're a dick, nobody wants you on their bus.
Yes,
you know,
so exactly.
It's like, and what we've learned is that over the years is that like one negative person, it's like a cancer. It spreads through the entire thing till all of us are just like bummed for no goddamn reason.
Yeah.
And so you really
we've
watch
spent
out for
a lot
that.
Of time curating, like we have like our core guys that have been with us, but just finding new people, it's tough. Like sometimes you luck out and find someone, but then, or you have a guy that's so good at his job, like you were saying, but he was just like we had a guy working for us. Last time we played Rock USA here in Oshkosh, we had a guy working for us, and the next day some of our friends were playing, and They're like, yeah, the hands were all like, oh, Hailstorm sucks because this one dude in our crew like bitched out the locals or something, which is like, we try not to have that vibe. And like, if you're whatever, he doesn't work for us anymore. But
well, you can't have that.
No, it's ridiculous.
And unfortunately, like to roadies, like and to your crew, like you are representing the brand too. Yeah. It's not just about, you know, in the same aspect is that it's not just about us playing and people listening. We all get to do this together. We're all enabling each other to, you know, to do what we love. Same thing with the crew. It's like, you know, you're representing us and the band, you know, and that whole feeling.
Yeah, it was just a bummer to hear like, oh yeah, all the hands were pissed about us, you know.
I've gotten
because that guy was a dick.
Yeah, I've gotten calls. I got a call one time from Phil Campbell from Motorhead who knew a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy that said, hey man, this guy from Fozzy's an asshole. And that went down the food chain. So like when Phil Campbell called me, I called him. I said, Phil called me. This guy has to go. Because if it gets all the way to that level of a good friend of mine, but why is Phil hearing about our bad reputation? Yeah. You know it's getting some, you know, some mushroom cloud from
it. You know, like you said, like whisper down the lane. It's like by the time it gets to like those people, they don't know it was a roadie. They think it's you.
That it's Lizzie and Jericho or assholes. Yeah, exactly.
So
right now you guys are kind of doing just a few shows here and there. You're in that strange area where the album is done, but it's not released. Yeah. But you got to get out there. How is it? Is it a lot of shows before it comes out? Is these just kind of warm up gigs?
These two, and then our next show after this is we play. It's the day of the record release.
Oh yeah, day of the record. Yeah, so yeah, these are the last
go back
two.
And
the last two in purgatory.
Because that's when you play a couple new songs, which you want, and people are always kind of just looking like, hey,
that's cool. We haven't really heard.
You don't know these ones.
Yeah, we're gonna do one, and we've been playing two new ones, but they're out. There's like the pre-release songs.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do a new one tonight that we've never played out before.
Okay.
So that'll be cool.
So that'll be fun.
New record is called Vicious.
Yeah.
And when this airs, it will be out.
Cool.
Go buy it now. Always exciting to make a new record. Now you have to say what every band says. This is our best album we've ever
done. It's the best we've ever made.
Yep.
You know, honestly, hopefully it keeps going that way. Like for us, it's like we're a band that we get bored with repeating ourselves. So we never want to do that with every record. So hopefully we just keep pushing. And as long as we think it's our best record.
But I think you have to have that vibe and have to say that. Because if a band ever went, this is definitely our third best record.
Yeah, no, that's like, good, actually.
You're like, okay, it's not really giving me voting well for when
we tried real hard, didn't quite, you know.
Yeah, didn't quite nail it, but we're going to put it anyway.
We're going to put it out anyway.
Hopefully we fool you guys. Right? But yeah, so the one thing that we had in common from before is for the Judas record, we work with Johnny Andrews, and I know he did a lot of work with you guys.
Yeah.
But Joey said you have a new guy in tow now.
We Nick Raskolnik produced this record.
Right.
He's awesome. He's
Rush
one of the
guy.
Bona fide real rock and roll dudes out there, you know.
Yeah,
he did the new album, the last
Foo
three,
Fighters too.
Foo Fighters, last three Alice in Chains, some Deftone records,
the last Korn record.
He's got
some cool, exciting things coming up that we can't talk about.
I'm
proud of him.
He immediately became like, we're like cut from the same cloth, Nick and I personally, like, you know, we're just kind of the same kind of dude, and he has this great energy, and he was immediately just like the fifth guy in the band, you know. And because we were kind of lost making this record, we wrote a bunch of songs at the end of the last album cycle, and they were really good. I know they were good. They would have done fine, I'm sure, done fine on radio, but it was like you were saying, like they were okay, you know. And it wasn't like pushing us forward. It was kind of a rehash of stuff we'd already done, and we were like, I don't know if we want to do this. And we showed him to Nick, and we kind of had that vibe. He's like, yeah, this isn't the Hailstorm record that I want to hear. He's like, you haven't made the record that I want to hear you make yet. And
which is cool to hear, but it's also a little bit like, well, fuck you then.
No, I agreed with him because we haven't captured the energy on a record yet that I think we could. Well, I think we did this time finally. And we tried on the last record with like playing live together because we know we have a great energy live, but it's such a different thing in a studio, and you don't want to make a live record.
Yeah.
You want a studio recording, but how do you get that energy of like a live show? And Nick had all kinds of tricks, and really, I think it just, he was just like, all right, we don't want to do that. We know what we don't want to do. And we were like, we don't know if we got it anymore. And he was like, because who's got a riff?
You go down those rabbit holes in your head. You're just like, damn it, I hate everything I do. Can I even do it anymore? Deserve to be here? What the hell is going on?
I don't even deserve to live.
Help.
Yeah.
So but yeah, he had a bunch of like awesome little tricks, like just to get that stuff out of us, you know, And like Joe said, you know, we just kind of, he stuck us in a room and he's like, all right, every day. Like, this is like, we started with like practically nothing. Like every day. All right. Who's got a riff? Who's got an idea? Whatever. Here we go. We'll start
just
there.
Go from there. Right.
You know, and
when you record your vocals, how do you record them? Like the question being like, do you have the mic on a stand? Do you?
Well, I've done it many different ways, right. But this time, you know, in the studio with Nick this time, he had me just like in the room with him. It was a mic stand. It was mostly an SM7, so which is just, you know.
Yeah, gotcha.
I was just wondering, anyway.
When you're talking about the live side of things, I started just having like a handheld rig and you're actually moving it around.
We did a lot of that. I didn't necessarily move it around because I have a tendency to have like mic control thing, and that's
not
true.
Well, you play guitar too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So he had a lot of those things as far as vocally too, just like as in he had a strict like we're not going to fly anything policy, so every section is sung
meaning
as
no punch-ins.
Wow. Well, so it's like, well, no, like so let's say you sing the chorus perfect that one time, you don't fly that to the next chorus.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, of course, right.
And each section is sung as a performance, so he would have me do like, even if we were just working on the verses, you're doing the whole verse from beginning to end. We're not punching in, and because I want to hear that bloom, mm-hmm. because down to the very minute detail, he said something that was kind of an oh duh moment. He's like, well, you know, we're not going to do this as a live record, obviously, but to get that kind of energy is like, think about it. You're going to sing that second chorus differently than you're going to sing in the first one. You're going to sing the end of that verse differently if you came from the, you know, beginning of it,
sure,
because that's what you're going to be doing live, and at the end of the song you're going to be wanting to bring it home because you've already have all that experience in your head, like singing the song, so you want to like, you know, so I want to hear that. And then there were a lot of times where I would be doing a scratch take for the guys, like we would kind of map out a song, and then, you know, to like just a kind of a scratch guitar and a click, I would sing the song so that like RJ would know where we were on the song, kind of thing. I think it was Hara Novocaine where he used both things. He's like, oh no, I like this take better. I'm like, but that's when I wasn't even thinking about it. I was just doing it. He's like, that's exactly it. Because
that's why, right?
We went back to sing the song and you're thinking, I have to be a singer and I have to like be on key, whatever. And all that stuff that goes through your head. And so he like made sure that we kept a lot of those moments.
It is cool. Like when you work with a new person, like for us working with Johnny, we'd always self-produce. And when you get that other voice and like you said, like this is good, but it's not good enough. You can do better.
Yeah.
You know, it really does. Like it's a real kind of, like you said, oh wow moment when it actually, you nail it. Like you can really learn from working with different people.
We did things in the studio that like we didn't think we could really surprise ourselves anymore, and Nick brought that up. It's same thing where it's like, we're like, oh yeah, that rocks, and he's like, oh no, I've seen you guys live. I know you can sing harder. I know you can play faster. I know your brother is crazier. We gotta up it. So he just kind of took everything that made us who we are, that we're like, that's good. And he's like, no, times 11 now, you know? So that was fun.
But that's important because you guys are at a not a peak, but like you guys have grown every record and almost at that precipice of being a legit, like, arena level.
Oh, no, that's sweet.
Headlining band. So it has to be better than the last.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. Right.
You know, because you see it happen all the time where a band will make a record and it just doesn't miss the mark and they start, that's it, right?
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah, hopefully. We'll see how this one goes. We went over to Europe, Lizzie and I, and did a bunch of press, like did a little press tour for like 4 or 5 days, did like 100-some interviews. And a lot of those journalists had just had heard the record. It had just been mastered right before we went over there. And it was cool getting the feedback. And it seems, apparently we made a really heavy record. We didn't even realize. We were just chasing down what excited us. And they're like, wow, this is really heavy. We didn't expect this. And they loved it. Like the reaction was really
like
awesome.
Overwhelmingly positive. So we're like, where's the catch? Where'd the haters go? Come on.
Well, that's what we were talking about. Like when you put out a record, you like, you hear it and you like it. And then you go through the phase, well, I don't even know if it's any good anymore. And then when it's done, you're like, I hope everyone else likes it. Someone else is going to like it. And those first couple like listens, you're always kind of scared of what people are going to say, you know?
That's a fun feeling, though.
Well, like, and when they do like it, it's funny, though, when you do those press tours, like I did one in Germany a couple of years ago. It's like, I do not like this record as much as the last one. Why is that?
Well, I can't explain that to you.
Yeah. Gee, thanks
you know,
a lot, right?
But you know what's funny? Like, we had a lot of people, you know, that said, you know, that our last album was a little lighter or whatever ended up happening with the last record. And we're still really proud of that record. And so whenever they bring that kind of stuff up, just like, oh, I love this so much better than the last one. It's like, well, good, you know? And some people will like the last record more than this one.
Right.
And honestly, like, it's all of our albums are just like snapshots of where we were at in our lives.
Sure.
So it's like, yeah, that we got that out of our system. Now we are on to the next thing. The classic, I don't know what we're going to do next, but we'll find out.
It's the classic Paul Stanley quote. It doesn't matter on what floor you get on to the elevator and what floor you get off. Thanks for joining us for
that's
one.
A great
whether
analogy.
It's from the bottom to the top or whether it's two floors or whatever. Thank you for coming. And when you didn't like it, you split and thanks. You know?
Yeah. Hell yeah, you know? Man. That's
I've
awesome.
I've heard that. That's cool.
That's
Paul Stanley with his Confucius little bits of things that he says. I'm like, oh, that's actually really cool.
That's a good comeback too. Next time somebody says something about yours.
I've like, used it before.
Actually, Paul Stanley.
Yeah. Yeah.
A really good point.
Yeah.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
I did the press tour for Judas last year in maybe it was Kerrang Radio or something in England, and they said, "Oh, so it's really cool that like bands like you and Hailstorm and have started like this whole new style of music." And I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? It's like more of like a rock and roll fun type of a vibe, like just pure rock." I'm like, "I wasn't aware that our two bands had started a whole new trend."
I did not realize that as well. But
yeah, it was one of the guys.
We talk about this all the time. We love rock and roll with a smile, man.
Yes.
Like, that's the bands that we grew up listening to. It's like, it's supposed to be fun. It can't always be serious. So yeah.
You know, like, what bands are you referring to that you guys liked when you grew up?
I mean, one in particular, I mean, Van Halen is the most fun band ever. Yeah, like, they kind of invented that shit.
I mean, that whole era was just fun music, party rock, you know, and it got a little dark in the 90s, and a lot of that darkness is still around, and people just writing bummer songs, which is cool. Some of them are just so amazing, and they really
hit
on something. But yeah, like when The Darkness came out, that was like such an amazing like breath of fresh air to
such
me.
Such a great, like you said, such a great switch. I remember that came out in 2003 when solos weren't really popular, and that song had three solos in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I love this band already.
Hell
amazing.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's what you want to do. Like you said, rock and roll with a smile, you know, like even tonight there's a couple cameras and you smile and you wink. And I'm like, I feel like David Lee Roth, but that's good. That's the way it should be.
It's a good feeling.
We have such a great time on stage, just the four of us. Cause it's like, it's still just kind of, we still just plug in and play. And so, you know, things can go horribly wrong and things can go amazing. And it's that ebb and flow. And so we're like, we have this weird, I mean, we've all known each other. I mean, obviously my little brother and I have known each other for our whole lives, but we've been a four piece for 15 years. So like
same lineup. That's impressive too.
So like we'll be on stage and we'll be making fun of each other, like with our eyes the whole time, like, oh, that was you, you know, I heard that, that kind of stuff. And it's just fun. You know, that's all we got into it for. And so, you know, you don't want to lose that.
You mentioned RJ. We did a Metal Allegiance show last year in, at the NAMM convention.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were playing Riff Raff. And Riff Raff, everyone wanted to play Riff Raff. And RJ, like whoever the musical director was, put RJ on the drums for Riff Raff. So we were rehearsing it. And you know, RJ, like he's bouncing off the walls and he's like playing all these fills and all this stuff. And I was like, dude, stop. I said, this, you got to listen to the beat of this.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing happening. Boom, top, boom, top, boom, top, da, da, boom. Yeah. And he's like, okay, I'll check it. I said, go home and listen to it. Really listen to it. He came back the next day and he nailed it. And he's
like,
who would have thought that the hardest song of the set was the AC/DC song?
Was the AC/DC song.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's why it's hard, because it's in the pocket. There's no fills. It's just boom, da, do, da. You know?
It's hard to do that simplistic
right
power stuff, you know. It's easy to fill up space,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I
singers holding out a note. One note is like, that's the hardest, you know.
Just keep going.
And but like, no, just hold out a note once, and like,
just keep
the
on
big ones.
It.
They just can't do it.
Right. You're right. And what were you saying? You're talking to your brother?
Oh no, like my brother and I talk about that all the time, just comparing. Like, yeah, no, it's you and me, bro. Because as long as you and I are solid, no matter what happens,
that's
you know.
Right. Oh, so is that how you guys do it? Because you're rhythm guitar, drums, not bass and drums. As far as locking in,
I mean, we have an amazing bass player. We call him the human super glue. So when things get chaotic, he's the one that kind of pulls everything together. But yeah, but like honestly, like the bottom line is that, you know, if I'm sucking or RJ is, like, it's highly noticeable, and that's
if a singer or a drummer in a band isn't cutting it, the whole band.
We try
bad.
Not to think about that too much because of pressure, but you know, we do talk about it. You know, in that same aspect that you were saying about fills and just like, no, like it's the hardest thing to do is keep that together. Yeah. You know,
so. That's one thing we really learned from Johnny was like, we always had a tendency. Well, we're musicians, right? You want to play, you want to show that you can just do an instrumental part, and he would cut stuff out. And like our biggest song called Judas has no solo. And back in the, you know, you gotta have a solo. And he's like, why? Why do you need a solo? Doesn't make the song any better. Doesn't add anything to it. He's like, it's got an instrumental part, but like you learn stuff like that. And it's like, it's not sometimes what you play, it's what you don't play. It's just letting the groove take control.
Exactly. We've done that a lot live too, depending on the whether it's like an arena thing and depending on the sound. Like if there's like a night where, okay, this is an arena night. Everything is going to be bouncing off the wall. So like we end up simplifying sometimes, simplify like our parts, the beats,
really?
The parts, sometimes
depending on the show,
chords, that kind of thing, depending on the show, just because we know it's like, okay, you can do all the, like, RJ can do all the ghost strokes he wants. No one's going to hear him, you know? And if anything, no one's going to get, it's like, it's all about that boom ka, you know,
open sound up. Like, let's try to sound like we belong in an arena.
Yeah,
say
pretty
that.
Much.
Like, right. Make arena rock, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
There, cause you can hear everything in the little clubs and it's cool, but to play that arena, you just got to play
all that slap
the room
back
kinda,
and everything. Yeah.
It's a different world, you know? Like it's crazy. It sounds, we played a rock festival in Tampa about a couple months ago, and it was one of the first, or maybe the first arena show. But you know, you feel like oh my gosh, you feel like Mick Jagger, like this is it. And there's like people everywhere, and it's just like, that's the true test of a band. Cause like you said, small rooms, you can take control of the room. Big room, to get control of the big room, you really gotta be on.
Yeah.
What's the biggest tour you guys have ever done? You've done some arena tours.
I mean, headline tour was probably the last one, right? We did
the last one,
arena
the
tour.
One coming up. It's like we're like moving into like hockey arenas and stuff, and like the smaller arenas and towns, which is cool.
Have you ever supported someone on a big arena tour?
We've done a bunch. Like we toured with Eric Church, which was huge, sold out arenas. Yeah,
that's interesting. How did that come about?
I don't know.
He asked for it. Yeah.
He's kind of a rock and country guy.
He's a rocking dude, and he wanted a band to kind of come out swinging for this tour, and he even made a point to, like, first day of tour, he came in our dressing room and he's like, all right, what's the set list look like? Like, he's like, no ballads. I don't want to cater to the audience at all. I don't want no twang, no nothing.
Wow.
He's like, I want you to come out swinging. This is what you're here for. And so we did, and it took like 3 songs.
Yeah, we had to win a crowd. It was fun.
We had to win them over. It felt like it was like 05 all over again, first starting a tour. Like, okay, because I would go out, right, and we would like come in swinging with like Love Bites or something, and you'd see like all these good old boys just in the front row, just like cross arms,
female?
Looking at me like, and then by like the third song, they'd be like nudging their buddy. We're just like, hey, yeah, you know, it's actually kind of cool. And then by the end, you when you get them, I'm like, ah, got you. It was great. It's such a cool feeling. I missed it. You know, I didn't realize how much I missed that.
I love tours like that though, where you gotta earn it, you know, and I'm glad we did it, because we got it. We're like, really, do we want to do that? It's like country. We don't play country. Yeah. And I don't know. We don't know anything about that. And it was awesome. And there's still a lot of people that come up and say, oh, I first saw you.
I first saw you there. Yeah.
Like you said, that, like any, you know, when you're preaching to the choir, that's great. But it's when you can win over the fans.
Yeah.
We did one show with Motorhead, maybe 2006 or something. There's one guy that he's like a typical, like a Motorhead dude. Like, I don't want to hear anybody ever but Motorhead. And arms crossed, and like at the end, kind of nodding, and at the end, gave us a little thumbs up. And I was like, did that guy give us a thumbs up?
Yeah.
It was the equivalent of a normal person like jumping up and down in the air. Yeah. But I mean, to get that feeling is what it's
absolutely.
All about, right?
Absolutely. You know, and it's funny too, because like people don't realize is that most people, if it's good, it's good. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't like, I only listen to metal, or I only listen to country, or I only listen to pop. It's like, if it's good, it's good. So like, if you can put yourself in front of somebody like that and kind of be like, oh, see, okay, awesome. Sure. That's good. I will appreciate that, you know, kind of thing. So
I've always thought that, like, if you're a good rock and roll band, you can play it with Slayer or Bon Jovi or Eric Church or Justin Bieber, and people will get into it.
And it's a good challenge. We have an amazing booking agent that, you know, has been with us from the beginning, and he's always into, like, all right, it's not, because it's never been about the bottom line or about the money for him. It's like, it's always about, okay, what's next and what haven't we done?
Building
and
the
what
brand.
Should we do? Yeah. You know, and doing some weird stuff like that is right up his alley. So,
and I know, Joe, so you guys got a tour coming up with In This Moment and New Year's Day, which I think you've done before.
We did it this spring.
We decided to do it again.
All three bands with the girl singers, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
You know? It's fantastic.
It, what's really neat is, like, you see, like, Ash from New Year's Day and Maria from In This Moment and Lizzie, like, they're three women in hard rock and or metal even at times, and but they're so different. Like, it's not like, you know, they're each like queens in this totally different aspect of the genre. Like, Maria is really theatrical, and Ash is like kind of like this punk, gothy,
emo
thing.
Yeah, punky.
And Lizzie's just like this rock and roll,
whatever the hell I am.
Yeah, and it's really cool. There's so many, you know, for a genre that typically hasn't had too many women in it. Like, it's cool to see that there's this big spectrum.
Did you ever have any issues with that, Lizzie? I mean, because always, like, like you just mentioned, not a lot of rock bands, although there's so many great ones if you actually know.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you ever have an issue with that when you were starting?
I mean, it was kind of like an evolution of me trying to figure it out, because I grew up in a household where, like, it wasn't even really discussed that, like, oh, when you get out in the real world, there are going to be people that think that you can't do this because you're a girl. Right. Or that it was always just like, yes, you can do anything, you know. So my childhood naivete was actually a kind of a weapon for a while, because I just had blinders on, like, I'm just doing my thing, cool, up until, like, when we first started really touring as a band. Like, I'm like, great, I hang with the guys, cool, you know. And first couple instances, and this would happen on a local level too, and I ended up kind of using that as a weapon as well, but, like, there would be these hands or local people or whoever, you know, at the venue. And I remember specifically, I would be restringing my guitar side stage and looking the way I do. And multiple times people would come up like, oh, that's awesome. My girlfriend never does that for me. Like, assuming
oh,
I'm there.
Wow.
Or there were a couple times where they would look at me and without even blinking an eye, just like, oh, and the merch table's over there if you want that kind of stuff. Yeah. So, and, you know, like, whatever. I never got upset at it, but I would always be like, well, just wait, because they don't know I'm getting on stage. And then you go on stage, you do your thing, and then every single time, oh my god, I'm so sorry. I assumed. So then you get into, like, you know, when we're shopping to labels or, like, the industry thing, when getting onto radio, and then, you know, we heard it, you know, from practically every label on the planet that we showcased for was, hey, we love what you do, we think you guys are talented, but we don't know what to do with you.
There's no girls in rock so we can't
right
really
now, and that's a
that.
Well, they would be saying it's a hard
so
sell.
Stupid, right?
I know it is, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but that's what they would say. And then they would go one step further. I hear from the radio guys, like, hey, you're gonna have a hard time, because if a PD already has another girl, that means that you're not really going to be on that, right?
Evanescence,
because
puts out a new single.
Well, what that's the thing, that, you know, it's like they've filled that novelty spot is what would happen. So anyway, so then you go through adorable. So then you go through that, like, stage of it's no longer naivete. You realize what you're up against. And so there's this almost like teen angst defiance that goes along with that. We're like, well, that's ridiculous, I'm just going to do it anyway. And then it's amazing on this tour to kind of be a little bit on the other side. And at any one of these festivals, I'm no longer the only girl on the bill.
Right.
I'm no longer the only girl at the festival. And not just on stage, but there's, you know, I mean, on this tour alone, there's two female tour managers, they're female lighting directors. Maria has all her dancers. I've never been surrounded by more estrogen in my life, but it's cool to be on stage. And Maria and I talk about this all the time. Same thing with Ash. And we didn't realize how important it was, you know, for us to do this, not only for ourselves and to kind of, like, see each other thriving in our own, you know, empires. But it's amazing because in the audience, it flipped. It's usually like 60-40 male, female, you know, in these audiences that we normally play. And it is completely the opposite of that. There are more women that are in the audience. And it's all, I mean, like what he was saying before, it's all the same moments. It's all the same hard rock moments. but it just so happens to be genderless because it's just they're all the girls are doing the same thing. It's so crazy, you know, to see that firsthand.
But that's like it's so funny because as we're talking, I'm like I am on the same boat coming from wrestling. It's like well, wrestling guy, you can't be in a good band. Wrestling guy, and then as you persevere. And suddenly you have a couple hits and then that wrestling persona, which is basically just show business, working a crowd.
Absolutely.
Suddenly like Jericho's a great front man. Well, because I took all the qualities from rock and roll into wrestling, then brought them back to rock and roll.
That's awesome.
It's the same thing with it's like, okay, fine. Okay, I'm a girl, but let me show you what I can do.
Absolutely.
You know, and I had Living Color on this show and they said when they first went to the, I think it was Warner Brothers, they escorted them to like the 12th floor, which was the R&B floor.
Oh no.
It's like, no, we're a rock band. It's like, no, you're not. Like, you know, you can't be black guys in a rock and roll band. Yeah. So there is always that kind of preconception when something is different. But then when something is different, that's how you can really make it to the next
level. Absolutely. Yeah. So there's, and I say this always, you know, as a girl, like what, cause they are always like, what's it like? Is it hard? You know, it's going to be hard to make it no matter what gender you're in. You know, it's like, and there are different obstacles that maybe I have to go through than some of the guys. But ultimately, what was to my advantage, and same thing with you, is that you have that flip that isn't normal. Like, I wasn't another, you know, male
dude in a band. Yeah.
And, but also, it's like, same thing with you. You're bringing something so different to the table that once you get kind of past that hump, you know,
once you get over the push the snowball over the cliff.
That's where the iconic shit happens. I heard that from Pat Benatar. Pat Benatar was like, "Yeah, man, it's like you're in this like stage right now where it's like everyone's like super excited. Everyone wants to root you on. Then you need to go through this very long stage where everybody hates you and nobody cares that you're putting out music. But if you can make it through that," she's like, "that's when you're in your big house and you're sipping your big glass of wine, and that is the iconic shit." And she's like, "I will personally slap you if you do not make it to that." So I'm like, yes.
When did you meet her to talk to her?
We had this interview together. This was in 2012 when we
Revolver.
Revolver did this. There's this thing where it was a rebel meets rebel is what they called it. And so it was like me interviewing her, her interviewing me. But it was so funny because our mediator just was just like, "I'm just gonna walk out of there," because we just started talking and we didn't have questions. But like, she was really cool. So. Yeah.
It's so funny, like you said, like, you know, there's no girls in rock and roll, and you go through through every decade has dozens of like back to like, you know, Janis Joplin and Grace Slick, and then you're going through
legendary,
like the Van Wilson, and you're talking about Pat Benatar and Joan Jett. And
that would always be what I say. Just like, wait, what about all these people? But you know,
how was it when you guys toured with Lita Ford? That's kind of
cool. That was awesome.
Did you invite her?
We had been talking for a while about doing something, and then, you know, she had the time
she's a trip, man.
She's awesome. She is still like 18, like perpetually 18, and she looks great. Like, she gets up there and she gets in her Evel Knievel like one piece leather outfit every single day, and she just gets up there and rocks out, and she's just like, truly, it's like, it's all about rock and roll for her. She's like, does it rock? Good.
She's got great stories.
Oh, she's got amazing stories. And she has no problem telling
you all about
down to the minute detail.
You know who's got a bigger dick?
Yeah, okay. Just randomly in catering. Do you know who's got a bigger? Now I can't unknow that, Lita. Come on.
Whenever I see this person.
Yeah, but we'd be funny because it was myself and Lita Ford, and then we had Dorothy out opening, and so, you know, and Dorothy is up and coming. She's got an amazing voice, and so it was just really neat to hear. Like, we would have these like little meetings in the hallways like every day. Like, we start talking about stuff, and I would say like, "Oh, this just happened to me," and she's like, "Oh, I remember when that happened to me," and then Dorothy would be just like, "Oh, when that happens to me." So it was this neat like kind of three-tiered, like we all were having the same experiences but on a different level, and
that's cool.
So yeah, it was cool. And now Lita just actually just texted me because she got her hair done, and she's like, "What do you think? I got it." So it's kind of
still
neat.
Girls, right?
Still, yeah, still girls at the core, you know.
How was it for the two of you guys, like being the two guitar players in the band, putting together your parts and all that sort of thing?
We're in the middle of that right now with all the new songs. Actually, this is the first time doing it this way. We got all the tracks from the studio and like loaded them into our studio at home and took the guitars out but left the drums and bass on. And we're trying to like, the four of us, we don't use tracks on stage or anything, so it's just the four of us,
which is rare.
Yeah, but apparently. And And it's the four of us interpreting what we did in the studio. Yeah. That's a live show.
If you're doing like 10 tracks of guitar on a song, how do you incorporate that into two guitars?
So we gotta we figure it out, and you know, so you don't play every part, but
and sometimes we switch each other's parts. Like you know, we just decided that on this one song where it's like, oh no, you'd be better playing the lead here, then I'll do the rhythm there, and it's like, okay, cool. That's just So it's all about the dance too. Like okay, so if we're gonna make this moment, it's going to be easier for you to play that and me to play this.
Yeah, or like, don't come in on the chorus.
Don't come in on the chorus
till the chorus.
Till the chorus, make it bloom.
Make it bigger. And
Right.
So, we can, it's fun to do that. Just kind of like, all right, now I got to rethink the songs and how do we make these moments happen live instead of in the studio.
Do you play a lot of leads?
I do. He's just so much better at it than I have a different approach to leads. I come to everything from a vocal standpoint. So if I can't physically sing it, I don't understand it.
Gotcha.
You know, so it's like I'm not a huge shredder. I'm working on that. I'm actually in the process of learning Randy Rhoads leads now because I just want to immerse myself into it. You never stop learning, right? But so it just depends. Like he's Mr. Fast Fingers, so it depends
on
what.
But that's good, though. You want to have the division, right?
Yeah, she's got like a vibrato that's insane. It's like a Tom Kiefer vibrato. She's got her own sound. Wide. It's awesome.
But I always like that, like when James Hetfield would play a lead, like in Nothing Else Matters, or Orion, or like Paul Stanley plays a lead, like in Black Diamond. It's just cool, like the rhythm guitar player. But when you get a few of those real monumental, like you said, the sound of it, it's a little bit of a different vibe to it. Yeah. It's cool to do.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. And I'm one of those people that I never want to, even though I'm the lead singer, I'd never want to step on anybody's toes. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always just like, until I'm needed, I'm just here.
You're great. We do a lot of improv. Not a lot, but we have improv moments on stage, which is my favorite.
Like jamming moments, sort of?
Yeah, we'll just...
So he'll force me into
go
it.
Off on this, you know.
Like, go!
Try to make a moment, and you start talking to the four of us up there in front of a crowd and trying to make a moment that we've never done before. And that's, music is alive to me then. It's like you're on the edge of your seat. It's pure expression. And you know, I'm gonna do a solo and listen to me, and we're talking to each other with rhythms and notes and try to build up and this tension and release. And
and then we all have to somehow figure out how to communicate how we're going to get out of it too, could go horribly wrong.
But she jumps in and she'll take over and do some solo, which is fun for me to get back on the rhythm. And then we try to, I don't know, it's just talking musically.
But like you said, that's where the music comes alive, because you know, when you do a set, especially if you're supporting somebody, headline, you have a little bit more, you know, leeway. But when you're supporting, you get 45 minutes. Okay, that's 8 songs. These 8 are working the best.
Yeah.
And these stage raps always get reactions.
Yeah.
But you have to, you know, you have to make sure to always have a song. Like we use a lot of tracks, but there's a couple songs where there's none, because you do want to elongate it or shorten it.
Absolutely.
And do an extra long solo. What's the crowd like? What can we do? If you don't have that, it becomes very sterile.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it gets boring. You know, you do the same thing every night, and you're not even thinking anymore, you know. And I remember that happened to me back in like 2010. We're on Uproar, and like we had like a 30-minute set, 25 minutes or something.
So we just
sticking to the moments that we had, one record out, and sticking to the moments that we knew worked. And I think we were playing Alabama or something. I got like bored on stage. I was going through the motions. I was like, oh no. I was like, is this over for me? Like, did I just like, and so I was all worried the next show that it would be like that again. And I realized that it's not really about us. It's more about, I had my fun with the crowd, you know, like trying to make people laugh in the front row, throwing picks at them. And it's like, oh no, this is great. I was looking at it wrong.
You gotta live in the moment of it too. Because like you said, no matter, even if the set is the same, the crowd is always different.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Totally. I mean,
that's why I hate rehearsal, because God damn it, I have to sing I Get Off again. but every night it's new, you know, because it's new people and it's great to like, you know, hear them singing along or whatever. And so, something that's interesting though, that you just said, that like, I don't know if many bands really realize that do kind of go through the motions, is that people can tell when you're bored. And it's like, if you're not having a good time, as like what we were saying before, Rock and Roll With A Smile, if you're not having a good time, no one else is going to have a good time.
You're
you
right.
Know?
You're right.
It's like, and to the point where it's like, there are some days like we're like, I don't know, you'll be sick or something, and we're just like, I'm just kind of singing angry, but it's okay, because then as soon as you say like screw it, everyone's like, wow, that was like the best performance I've seen you 8 times. Like, seriously?
Yeah, really? That's the one you liked?
That human element.
You
to
get
it,
that all
you
the
know?
Time. I had a bad night on stage, or I didn't hit those notes. Who gives a shit, man? Cheers, yeah. You know, you want perfect rock and roll. Listen to the record.
Exactly.
You
want to
have
I
a good
agree.
Time. Just have fun.
You know, one of my favorite rock and roll moments was then when Aerosmith finally got to play the Grammys with that "Don't Want to Miss a Thing" song, mm-hmm. right? The one number one hit that wasn't even theirs, but Steven Tyler missed the entire first verse.
Oh,
he
yeah.
came running out and like just to hear you. I'm like, was like he, yeah.
Did he get lost awesome. Backstage or something? Just,
yeah, like he couldn't find the stage. Something was going on, and the band, everybody started and was like, "Where's Steven?" We're like, "I think the song should have started by now. That seems like the intro." He just came running out. I'm like, and it made my heart so happy to see that, because it's like these are legendary
yes.
like, musicians that should probably have their shit together, and sometimes that just doesn't work out, you know. So I
saw
I
the Stones play in 2013 or 14, and it was It's Only Rock and Roll, and dude, I don't know what happened, but Mick was in Cleveland and Keith was in Pittsburgh
really?
And Charlie's in Denver. It was so off. Like it was, I was like, they've played
oh,
this
no,
song
forever.
Since 1972, probably 1,000 times.
Oh my
and,
God.
And they all just got together and Charlie just kept playing and Mick's gone. Like he doesn't care. So they got to catch up to Mick. So they all just gathered around like an old school rock and roll band yeah. and just watched Charlie, and then Daryl got into
Center.
It, and then Wood, and then Keith, and you could see Keith just laughing, like thinking, like this was the shits. But hey,
that's
we
awesome.
Got it back. It took yeah. about a minute, but even the Stones,
yeah,
can, have those
can like that,
yeah.
right? That's have you ever had any of those moments, like you mentioned the Steven Tyler, like a Spinal Tap type rock and
oh,
roll
yeah.
moments?
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
I think our entire ride has been one big Spinal Tap moment.
We used to start the show with just Lizzie singing a cappella from off stage. She would start. I mean, you know, this like 45, maybe it was like a minute long a cappella thing and walk out on stage. And
one of those weapons we were talking about before where it's like, no one's expecting me to be in the band, so let's just start with me.
Right.
And everyone be like, what the
yeah,
fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
So continue. We start, we're waiting, and we look around, we're like, where the hell is RJ? And like, where's RJ? And we go, Lizzie! Keep
Stall.
It going.
So I had gotten to like the point where like RJ is supposed to kick everybody in, and I look and it's like nobody, and their side is like to keep going. So I'm like, I had to make up some shit on this
just person singing. In the front
like,
row.
I'm like Nebraska, you know, like I don't know.
And
it's like
you
awesome.
See RJ, he was in the RV at the time. We were in an
just
RV.
Doing
just
thing.
He comes in like,
where's the
running.
Stage?
Jumps on the kid. Boom. We're like, all right, here we go. It was awesome.
If people only knew the stuff that happens, right, to
oh,
make a show.
Man.
Yeah.
We played this little place. I can't remember, someplace in West Virginia, and it was like, it's called like Munchies or something like that. Munchies, yeah. if you're listening. Last time I mentioned Munchies, they got mad at me, so apologies. But it's just a little roadhouse.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is what it is, and so they're paying a great guarantee. I'm like, really? We're playing? Just play the show. Okay. So they give us a menu. And Frank, our drummer, ate something on this menu that we claim was like mountain shrimp. Some kind of shrimp that I don't know where it came
shrimp.
Right before the show, he's just like, oh, dude. And he runs into, like, it's one of those ones where there's not even dressing room. You got to go through the outside.
Oh, no.
And he ran into the woods. And, like, our intro's playing. I'm like, dude, like, you've got, like, 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and you're in the woods.
Yeah.
There's nothing out there. And like you said, we come back in and walk in. He just came running in and jumped down on the kit and played.
It's amazing.
And after the show, I'm like, what did you do? He's like, dude, I grabbed a bunch of leaves, and I had some bottled water, and I made it work.
That's
like,
awesome.
The show must go
it's
on,
funny
right?
with the drummer. Right, because I remember RJ locked himself into that dressing room. I remember
yeah,
we played that upstairs. In
all of a sudden, we're like,
home,
RJ, we got to go on.
And
he's like, I'm in here. I don't know how to get out.
So this was in like this is back in the day. This when we were playing locally, and in our hometown there was this like music store, but like above the music store there was a venue, but they also used some of the rooms for like guitar lessons or whatever, and they gave us some of those for like dressing rooms. So RJ decides to get changed in one of these things. So we. Walks in, he shuts the door, and I guess it locks as soon as you shut it. And the guy, the venue owner, didn't have the key because that's for like whoever was gonna do guitar lessons for the next day. So like he literally had to unhinge like the hinges on the door to get him out because we had to go on.
It was
like,
an operation,
on, buddy.
Yes, life
yeah.
on the road, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
I said, if people only knew. As we wind down here, Joe, you mentioned to me before that every Friday you listen to new music that
yeah.
comes out. Like, because for people that don't know, that's when the new releases come out every Friday. So, like, what are you going on Spotify? Or are you looking for bands that you know, or just
I do Spotify and Apple Music. Like, I've subscribed to both.
Yeah, yeah.
They're I use them differently. Like,
do you keep an eye on what's coming out though, and have a list, or what? How do you
no,
know?
I do, like Apple Music has genres, you know. So, like Susie Cole runs the hard rock genre there and the metal one. So you can just pick the genre and see the new, that you can go to the new release section, see whether it's a new song or a new album that came out. You can find it for just hard rock or just metal, or the rock one is, to me, they missed the whatever. Alternative music is alternative music, and it's like alternative pop almost at this point. Mm-hmm. It's not, why some things are labeled rock, I don't know. Right. But then you go on Spotify and check those new releases, and you got to like look at the pictures and like, does that look rock and roll? What's that? And it's just like a different, it's weird. Whoever pays who or whatever, however it works, you always get like a different feeling
of what
from
it.
Yeah, what's being pushed and what's coming out and whatever. I try to listen to it all and just,
which is rare because a lot of bands don't listen to anything new. Like, you know, like Scott Ian will say, I haven't bought a new album since 1985 or something like that, right? But I mean, do you find that that helps you with your writing or just with your knowledge? Or
yeah, just to see what's going on. And like last week, I was, you know, I was talking about it with you earlier. Just like I find it really interesting because the girl who does Spotify rock playlist,
Allison Hagendorf, yeah, she's
awesome. She tweeted something or put something about Youngblood, whose record just came out on Friday. So I went to find that and listen to it because I was curious what she was pumped about, and it's cool. It's like he's like a British like 21 Pilots almost, and the record sounds amazing, like sonically, right. You know, like just listening in the studio, I was like, ah, oh, man, the low end stuff is just so low and pure, and it's just really well put together record. And I went from there and I went over to Apple Music and the hard rock and was like listening to some new songs, and the songs are cool and it's cool rock songs and stuff, but they sonically a lot of these new rock songs don't sound good, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, compare it, but it makes sense, like we were saying, it makes sense. Like, you go on the Youngblood record and it's all these samples and
triggers,
like perfect sounding instruments that were put together, you know. And then I'm sure there's a ton of money spent on the mixer. It's a major label release, and a lot of there's major labels aren't releasing that much rock, so the new rock that comes out is usually independent. And just to record a rock album and record drums and do all that is like,
correctly,
it's really expensive.
It is.
And to do it right and to do it well is really, really expensive. And I'm, you know, we were talking about that in a Rolling Stone interview the other day. Like, it's got to be like one of the reasons why not as many kids are getting, you know, starting rock bands and doing that.
Why do
that.
You think that is?
I think it costs too much money to make it sound good.
Well, that and I think sonically, I mean, as kids are getting, we're kind of like, this whole generation is kind of super babies because they're growing up with autotune. They're growing up with everything being perfect, everything sounding fantastic. So I think that honestly,
they can
like,
do it on their own.
They can do it on their own.
All in the computer.
But think about it this way, like even just discovering new music, do you want to hear the new like Kid Krupa that sounds amazing? Like the bass is just amazing and like whatever and everything's perfect? Or do you want to listen to some like local band in rock, you know, that it doesn't, I mean, I think that that's like a subconscious thing too, like where it's like, if it doesn't sound pleasing to the ears, they're not really going to listen to it. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still working on it.
Yeah, we're still working on a theory here.
Those days of going to the studio and spending 2 weeks on tuning the drums are gone.
I still like that stuff. I know. That's like
we
magical.
We were just talking earlier about how every trigger on most rock releases are still Lars's, the snare sound is still Lars Ulrich's snare from the Black Album.
Yeah, right.
And I was talking to Charlie from Anthrax. He goes, where did you get the trigger? And it's like, dot, 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 dot from Sad But True. Yeah. That was like every producer's dream fill because it's just the snare. And you could just take that and drop it into every single rock song if you wanted to, which we went through that phase, but then every song sounded the same.
Yeah,
the drums.
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
So there's that side of the coin of it as well. And you're right, though, because like our manager runs the Lakewood Amphitheater in Atlanta, and he's like, you know, rap and country is the new rock and roll. That's where you see a lot of the younger kids.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, because it is, I mean, especially with the rap right now, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's fresh. It's angry.
They're putting tattoos on their face.
I know. It's like,
why are you doing that? Oh my God. Because, and like, that's shocking. They found a way to shock.
Yeah, they found
with
a way
tattoos.
To shock people. Yes.
There's been a couple bands that we've toured with that have had the tattoos on their face. I'm like, dude, I wish you all the success in the world. Cause if this rock and roll thing falls through,
it is a pretty good guarantee that there's no plan B.
Exactly.
I mean, if you really got to kick your stuff into gear, get a facial tattoo.
That's right. What do you guys think of Greta Van Fleet? You mentioned Ali. She loves Greta Van Fleet.
They're awesome.
They're an amazing band. They're really good.
Yeah.
And they're really great live, too.
They're
like
a great live band. And, it's fascinating to me, like, just regardless of whatever. They're a great band, and they're playing rock and roll, and they're, like, going through the roof right now. And mm-hmm. Since our record came out in 2009, I don't think there's been a rock band that
like, that quickly
that has yeah. that has taken the elevator out of high speeds up. You know, like I was telling you earlier, like our career path has been just a slow mm-hmm. build over years and years and years, just super slow. And these
it's
guys
like the
just,
lowest pow. The lowest setting on you know like us you know on a treadmill. It's like I don't really want to go uphill, but I'm just gonna keep
there's
going
one there's one lower than Hailstorm saying that's just Fozzie setting because we're right behind it. Okay, we did it.
Oh yeah, we got it.
but you're right, like the Greta Van Fleet with not even a full album.
Yeah.
The thing I mean, obviously there's a lot of other Zeppelin this stuff, but to me I don't really care because there's a whole generation of kids that might have heard Led Zeppelin, maybe they love Led Zeppelin. Yeah. But a lot that don't, and this is a living, breathing.
And they aren't doing it anymore.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
Someone's got it.
Young band that kids can latch on to because they're like literally 21 years old.
Yeah.
And we need that type of a band to continue the ball rolling for rock and roll
and rock and getting other kids into rock. Like,
absolutely.
It's only good for everyone else. So when these like rock elitists are like, oh, it sounds like, yeah, shut up. Who cares?
Yeah. Like, it's catchy.
They're good.
It's good.
Yeah.
And if they play arenas at 21 or 22, that's just another band that raises the water for the rest of us. Because if not, Metallica's not around in. Well, maybe in 15 years, but the Stones won't be, McCartney won't be, you know, Guns N' Roses,
someone's gotta
U2.
Carry it on.
Someone's got to keep building that level.
Yeah, to everybody who whenever Greta comes up and to anybody that ever like says to me, it's like, yeah, but it sounds like Zeppelin. Oh, yeah? You try to play Zeppelin. You try to play like that.
That's
because
right.
these 18-year-olds are, you
that's
know?
Right. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I think it's great. I hope, I know they're making a record right now.
I think
hope
it's done. And
I hope it's,
what
it does really well for
them. What I was saying, too, is like, you know, whoever's behind that has sniffed the fact that we have a potential arena band here.
Oh, hell yeah.
They will put everything into it to make sure it's good. Like, the record that comes out, it's not going to suck because there's too much money at stake for that band to make it, you know?
That's awesome. I like that.
I hope so.
That is
I hope that still works.
And we're talking about it. Like,
it's
great.
Yeah. Last two questions. One just for you. Have you ever met Joan Jett, Lizzie?
No, I'm about to, though.
Okay.
What is in August?
Beginning of August. We're doing a show
playing
with her
for the first time. Yeah.
Just a random show?
It's crazy because, like, I've gotten to meet so many of my idols over the year, and I've gotten to meet the Heart Sisters and I guess have Pat Benatar and Stevie Nicks and all of that. It's like I haven't met Joan yet, so of course it's at the phase of my hair growth where I kind of have I'm gonna be such a fangirl, or at least I'm gonna seem like it.
Wear a leather bodysuit to a leotard.
Damn it.
Our agent is cool, our booking agent, because he like we opened up for Dio for Heaven and Hell on the last show that Ronnie ever did in New Jersey, and he just knew that it was the last show of the Heaven and Hell tour, and Coheed was on it, but they couldn't play that last one, and we happened to be passing through on a day off.
Like, do you want it? I'm like, yes.
He's like, I know you love Dio. He's like, so if you guys want to play, you know, I can put you on that. We're like, hell yeah. And it was a great experience, but like, he does that. He's like, I'm checking another one off the list for you guys.
Yeah,
the show with Joan Jett.
He called us up and he's like, you know, I remember when we first met, like, you really wanted to meet Dio and Joan Jett. So like, we got to do the Dio thing years ago, and here you go. Like, he's like, he's such a sweet dude. Like, he's been like an uncle to us forever. And so, yeah, he's keeping all that stuff in mind, which I think is really cool because it's not like, again, like I said, we have an amazing team. It's not just about like, okay, where's the dollars
like
and everything.
But it's keeping it creative and keeping it fun for you. It's funny because I remember you guys did a cover of Did You Straight Through the Heart?
Yeah.
And when that original album came out, they asked us, and somehow we couldn't do it. But I remember Rich and I were discussing, what song should we do? Like, oh, dude, we should do Straight Through the Heart. And then we couldn't, it just didn't work out. And then you guys did. I was like, you know what? It's better we didn't do it. That Hailstorm got to do it because it's pretty badass.
Yeah, that's a great record.
What's your last question for you guys? What's your favorite song on the new record, Vicious?
Oh, on this new record?
It's hard because they're all your
children. It's super new right now.
I'm gonna go with one. It's gonna be the last track we put out before it comes out. It'll be out a week before the record drops. It's Do Not Disturb. It'll probably be a single. It's such a good song. Lizzie wrote it, and it's just like a head turner.
You gotta go there.
Hailstorm has sex songs. Lizzie sings about sex, but this takes it to like a whole different level.
And it's like you hear it
and you're like, oh my God, did she say that? Awesome.
It's based on a true story, kids.
I can see the video now, just close-ups of those old 70s Do Not Disturb signs on the hotel door.
Oh, yeah, the 70s.
See?
We got to look that up.
Yeah, so you can do it. What's your favorite?
Right now, it's actually the title track because we haven't played it out electric yet, but we've done it a couple of times acoustic, and it's just I'm just excited just because it's a good groove, and I'm excited to play that one.
What's your favorite song to play live from all your stuff?
Oh geez,
we've been having fun with Misery. Yeah, it's our biggest song, but we always like freebird it out at the end and jam until
we freebird it out. Yeah. Yeah, so that's always fun, and it's great to have. It's great. We're super lucky to have a couple songs that, like, you know, if you played something like this, somebody's going to know at least one of them. And so, yeah, like, to have that kind of stuff is really crazy. I've been having a lot of these weird moments, and little bro and I will talk about it a lot. He's just like, do you remember when we were saying, like, man, wouldn't it be cool if people, like, sang our songs back to, I wonder what that feels like. You know, we'd open up for these bands and nobody would have any clue about what our songs were. It's like, won't that be cool? And like, now that that's like a part of our normal life. And he just said the other day, he's like, do you remember when we like were first invited on like buses and yeah, and we thought, like, what if we ever have a bus? And like, now a bus is like a part of our normal life. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's so weird. We have a lot of those
seven dust guys that let us come up on the bus when we were just kids in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, they took
come
you
up.
The bus.
John was like, come on up. Say, yeah, you guys want anything?
It's like, who does that?
Oh, my God, we're on a bus.
We're like, should we sit? Should we say, what do we do? What do we do?
I don't know what to do. Trying to look all cool and
do,
stuff.
You want some water? No, I don't want to take any of your water. I don't know. Is that good? Okay, I'll take water. You know,
my like, first dressing room was a band called Kick Axe from Canada. They're like, pretty, they're nice, not huge, but to be in Kick Axe's dressing room was just like, you know, hey, man. You know, you're like 14 years old. Yeah, what's up, dude? And you're like the biggest nerd ever, but you're in the dressing room.
It's amazing. You know? I just heard the best backstage story. From Johnny Dare of The Rock in
Kansas City. Yeah, I love Johnny Dare.
And he said that his first concert was Dio, and he didn't have backstage passes, but he's leaving with a bunch of friends. He's like 14. He's leaving, and he saw one of the passes like on the asphalt, like just like sticky,
stuck
face
on the
down.
Ground.
And so he's like, ooh, you know. So he got it, and he like tried to like get it on his pants or whatever, so we're seen, and he snuck backstage, and he's like, I didn't know what to do after that, because like I knew I wanted yeah, to get backstage, but now that I'm back, what do I do? And so he's just running around, nobody's in the hallway, you know, and all of a sudden like there's like a crack in the door, and then it's Dio. So he's like, hey kid, you working here? And he's like, yeah. He's like, do you want to come in and see the dressing room? You know, it's like, and like, and he's like, he hung
That's
out with
awesome.
Me for like an hour before he had to go and do like press and stuff. It's like showing me, oh yeah, this is like where the towels are and whatever. And I'm like, this is amazing. He's like, yeah, but he obviously knew I didn't work there.
Right.
You know, I'm a 14-year-old kid. He could see the thing coming off, but he took the time to do that. I'm just
this
like,
classic
so cool.
deal, right?
Yeah, yeah. Classic deal.
Something we try and do, but I would have kicked the kid out.
I know. I was just saying, like, who does that? That's what I told him. I was like, who does that? You yeah. know, it's amazing. So.
Well, thank you guys. I got to be backstage in Hailstorm's dressing room today. Yes. And I'm going to be side stage to watch your gig. So we did it finally. Thank you so much, guys.
No, seriously,
it
was awesome. You are delightful.
It's always great
so
to talk to the face of Rock USA. Yeah, I will be posting a picture All right, get the new Hailstorm album, Vicious. It really is their best album to date. And go see them on tour. The show is incredible. Lizzie sings her ass off. It's an amazing triple bill with In This Moment, New Year's Day. Hailstormrocks.com has all the ticket info, H-A-L-E-S-T-O-R-M, Hailstorm Rocks. You can also get the new record, Vicious, on their website, or you can get it on Amazon, Apple Music, Spotify, wherever you check out new music. I promise you'll dig it. Thanks to Lizzie and Joe from Hailstorm for hanging out with me at the Rock USA Festival in Joe's hometown of Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Oshkosh, big gosh. And thanks to everyone who's also booked a cabin already on Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. We are loaded with great rock and roll shows from Fozzy, more live music from Corey Taylor of Slipknot and Stone Sour. Phil Campbell and the Bastard Sons will be there. King is going to be there. The Stir, the Dave Spivak Project, Spiwee, you've heard him here on Talk is Jericho. Dave Spivak Project nominated for Blues Recording of the Year at the Calgary Blues Festival Awards. Congratulations to Spiwee. The Cherry Bombs, the Darlings of Rock and Roll, are going to be there. Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band. Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy Osbourne cover band. And if you book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com, you get to see all these concerts for free. all the comedy shows, live podcasts, meet and greets, photos, all included in the price of cabin. And of course, there's the wrestling, the big main event, Alpha Club, the Bucks of Jericho, or is it Y2 Jackson versus the Bullet Club. Then we're also going to have the Impact versus Ring of Honor, Sammy Callahan versus Marty Scurll, just added LAX versus the Young Bucks. They're talking about dream matches. How about a live Talk is Jericho with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat? Live Talk is Jericho with Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Condolences to the King about the loss of his son, Brian Christopher. Live Talk is Jericho with Rey Mysterio and Conan talking about Eddie Guerrero, the life of Eddie Guerrero. Live Talk is Jericho with the entire Bullet Club. Mick Foley doing his 20 Years of Hell stand-up show. The first round of the Ring of Honor, Sea of Honor tournament has been announced. Lethal versus Whitmer, Daniel versus Delirious, Skrull versus Titus, Young versus Gordon. Then we got Mark Briscoe versus Ferrara, Paige versus Kazarian, G Battleground versus Beer City Bruiser, upcoming guest from Talk is Jericho, and Jay Briscoe versus Kenny King. We got Keeping It 100 versus Killing the Town. So much going on. The Unprofessional Wrestling Podcast with Colt Cabana and Marty DeRosa. Beyond the Darkness there to scare the pants off you. Live comedy from Brad Williams, Craig Gass, Ron Funches, The Impractical Jokers. Special hosts Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. Cruise director SoCal Val. Special guest MC Noel Foley is going to be there as well. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Come join the fun. We are going to make history in the inaugural voyage of Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. If you like wrestling, if you like rock and roll, if you like me, hi, I'm Chris Jericho. Come check us out, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And we'll see you on Wednesday with the returning Dee Snider. He's got a new solo record called For the Love of Metal. He's going to be back on Talk is Jericho, and he has the gift of gab. One of my favorite guests will be here on Wednesday. We'll see you then. Have a great weekend. Until then, in the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.